It is not enough for us to just say we demand polluters to pay for what they are doing, and we sit back and expect that they will in fact respond to that demand. We have to have positions, but we also have to have processes and strategies of how to respond to climate change in our own continent. There are so many interests here, but the biggest interest of all are the interests around the kind of profits that can be made out of fossil fuels. We have massive investments in coal power plants, massive investments in oil and hydrocarbons. We know what needs to be done. Everyone knows what needs to be done. What is left is for us to do what needs to be done.
I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide?
Super excited to bring you a brand new episode of the Climate Talk podcast. Wow, if you've not been listening all year long, where have you been? Well, this is the Climate Talk podcast, and what we do on this Climate Talk podcast is to engage our very interesting conversations with thought leaders, environmentalists, conservationists, policymakers, professionals, and even people in power, people in the policy space. And together we have conversations about climate change, climate finance, climate denials, climate actions, everything around climate. Basically, all of this conversation is so that you, my listener, can take practical climate actions to make the world a better place, to make the world a more sustainable place to live in.
Soaring, tumbling, freewheeling through an endless diamond sky.
I must thank you indeed for making our time to listen to this podcast. The podcast comes to you every month. Every last Wednesday of the month, we publish a brand new podcast. So please feel free to subscribe. The description is going to be in the link. The website is www.climatetalkpodcast.com. You would also find the link to subscribe right there on the website. Be part of the over 5,000 people who get to listen to our podcast every month and who are inspired to take climate actions. For every episode of the Climate Talk podcast, you get to listen to Olumide Idowu and Jimo Oluwatobisegun are those behind the scenes making sure we do all the needful in producing every episode of the Climate Talk podcast. My name is Seyi Funmi Adebote. I am your green guide on this ride. Welcome to this episode of the Climate Talk podcast. I do not want you to hope. I want you to panic. I want you to feel the fear. I want you to behave like our house is on fire. Those are not my words. And of course the house is not on fire. But those are the words of 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg. I would love to think she's probably the most popular younger climate activist on the planet right now. And she's been leading the climate strike since last year, 2018, constantly, every Friday. She and her friends are out there pushing the message to the policymakers and asking that they want a better planet because there is no planet B. You may begin to think, is Greta my guest on this episode? Well, not so. My guest on this episode talks about how continuous knowledge and increased conversation have been able to encourage more young people to begin to demand for climate action, even from the people in power. No matter how little it is, this is a very strong part of the whole conversations around climate change and climate action across the world. At this point, I know you're a little bit curious about who exactly my guest is. My guest on this episode of the Climate Talk podcast is the head of the African Climate Policy Center at the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, UNECA. And for those who do not know, UNECA is that arm of the United Nations that deals with the economic issues on the African planet. And Dr. James Moron Beze is my guest. He is a global expert, not just on land use and right resources. Dr. James also understands how economic growth and climate change could complement each other, especially in the context of global sustainable growth. And that's exactly what our conversation focused on. I caught up with Dr. James in Accra, Ghana, and we are wondering what exactly did we talk about. Well, we spoke about the 100 billion Copenhagen promise. You remember the promise that where the rich countries said, you know what, by 2020 we want to put 100 billion on the African continent so that they can address climate change. How far have we gone? How realistic is it? And should Africans really depend on this? Away from that, we also talked about why there is a need for Africans to constantly be part of the global climate change fora, workshops, conferences, and all that. Does it really point us in the right direction? You will learn that from this conversation. One other thing that I found very interesting in this conversation is the truth, which I think is more like a revelation, where Dr. James made it clear that there is massive investment and there will still be massive investment in coal, fossil fuel and other unsustainable sources, because for these people in business, profit comes first. So how do we cope with this? So these are part of the conversations I had with Dr. James, and it was a very interesting conversation. Thank you again for making our time to listen to this podcast. I really appreciate that. My name is Seifumi Adebote, and this is the Climate Talk Podcast. So in the next couple of minutes, you will be listening to Dr. James and I having this conversation on climate change and global economic growth.
So my name is James Moron Beze, and I am the head of the African Climate Policy Center at the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa.
Okay, a great way to start is this. This is the African Climate Week. It's happening just after the United Nations Environment Assembly in Nairobi, and thousands of people have gathered here in Ghana. What exactly is in it for us as Africans?
So it's not only happening after the United Nations Environmental Assembly, it's also happening during a time when we are seeing a major disaster unfolding in Southern Africa, a weather-related disaster to livelihoods. Now, cyclones have always occurred. They've always been extreme weather events, but we do understand from all the climate science that is available that climate change is making the scale of these events much higher. The frequency much more frequent, and the destruction as a result is much greater. So the concern for Africa is that we do not really contribute that much to the global greenhouse gases. However, we suffer the most from the impacts of the accumulation of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. So climate change has got two implications for Africa. The one is, how do we get the world to actually begin to reduce their dependence on carbon fossil fuels? And secondly, how do we ensure that as we reduce carbon fossil fuel dependence, we maintain the ability of African economies to develop sustainably in order to address development-related challenges such as poverty, such as hunger, such as lack of adequate access to energy, to electricity, infrastructure, and so on. So these are two serious challenges. Firstly, addressing climate change, but secondly, maintaining a pathway towards sustainable development.
Wow, great. That's interesting. My next question is this. If Africa is not really a contributor, why do we have to do all of these meetings and conferences and talks and workshops? What if we channel all of this energy and fundings to say we're asking the real contributors to take actions and stop it from their own end?
There are structures, there are processes, and there are mechanisms that the world has come up with in order to develop solutions to climate change. One of those mechanisms, the most important mechanism, is the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. This is a framework convention that is negotiated between all countries that have signed the convention. And part of the way in which the convention works is it develops rules and regulations, puts in place targets, but also mechanisms by which we can govern our economic behavior, our financial aspects, our consumption, in order to address climate change. That is a forum for negotiation. So it is very important that we as Africans also meet and come up with African positions towards how our voices can be heard, but also how our interests and intentions can be reflected in those mechanisms, such as the UNFCCC. But in addition to those global mechanisms, we also need African processes for us to be able to interact with our member states and policymakers, our private sector, our civil society, so that we also develop African solutions to these challenges. In other words, it is not enough for us to just say we demand polluters to pay for what they are doing, and we sit back and expect that they will in fact respond to that demand. We have to have positions, but we also have to have processes. We also have to have policies and strategies of how to respond to climate change in our own continent.
Now, 12 years, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, 12 years under the timeline will elapse.
Yeah.
But do you think 12 years is enough to really realize it, looking at the challenges?
Yes. So this is a big, big question. I have said many times that it has taken 150, 200 years to reach the stage where we are. We have not changed our behavior in terms of how we produce, reproduce, and distribute our economies. We have continued to actually accelerate our consumption of fossil fuels instead of decelerate, despite the fact that the world has been asking for us to look at alternative ways of doing business. Instead, we have massive investments in coal power plants, massive investments in oil and hydrocarbons, massive investments in travel that is basically structured around fossil fuels, to move out of those into more sustainable, ecologically friendly forms of production, distribution and consumption is a major challenge on its own, without having a brief timeline in which to achieve this. But to do it in 12 years is an even bigger challenge. So what is going to be required for this to be possible is the engagement of everyone, from civil society, the private sector, governments, the global community, to ensure that in fact all of, because we know what needs to be done, everyone knows what needs to be done, what is left is for us to do what needs to be done. We have the No Planet B movement, yeah, which is led by children. Children, the future of our planet, are saying that there's only one planet. What kind of planet do you want us to inherit? Now, the children realize that there's only 12 years before we structure a planet where they can live a sustainable future. But are we really in a position to do that? So here, I think, I think we really need to ensure that the political leadership, the economic leadership, as well as the ecological leadership come together and agree that we really need to act, and we must act now.
By you saying we have to come together, I know to a great extent you are talking about civil societies, mm-hmm, and other sorts of movements that can get the government to act, or to know, mm-hmm, that there is that pressure, or that we have prioritized this. Mm-hmm. But then I look at the civil society, I look at the coalition and all the alliances that we have. Sometimes, mm-hmm, I see politics playing beyond what they should do.
Yeah.
And this is a challenge. How do you think we can address this?
Yeah, look, I mean, and this is my point always, that everything is political, right? You see, the problem is there are so many interests here that, mm-hmm, are involved. But the biggest interest of all are the interests around the kind of profits that can be made out of fossil fuels. And to ask people to move away from those profits, you need to be able to provide them with alternative opportunities where they can maintain their profits, because this is the system, the economic system that we have right now. But are we in a position and at a place where we can guarantee that you can disinvest from fossil fuels and still be able to generate the same amount of profit in other clean energy related ventures? That's the first question. The second question for Africa is that we know that all of the pollution that we are grappling with, the greenhouse gases, are in fact from fossil fuel use by developed countries.
Yeah.
Now in Africa, we are beginning to discover significant quantities of carbon fossil fuels. So are we going to be in a position where we forgo the potential of developing our own economies by using those carbon fossil fuels and say, no, we want to go green? Or are we going to start exploiting those fossil fuels in order to develop just like everyone else? And Africans are saying in all of the common positions that we have developed that yes, we as a continent are prepared to go green. However, we need significant investment, we need significant technology transfer, and we need capacities for us to be able to undertake green development and to leapfrog the brown technologies that have made the world what it is today. But herein lies the challenge. Since Copenhagen COP, we've been told that $100 billion is going to be made available a year to support climate actions. We have not seen much of that money. We have not seen much technology transferred. We have not seen much investment in capacity development. So what reason do we have to expect that it is going to happen now that we are told we have only 12 years? So this is where I'm saying by coming together, we need to recognize that there are significant interests, very powerful interests, that want to continue on a business as usual path. When we come together, we need to also constitute a powerful interest group which is able to propose alternatives, which is able to ensure that those alternatives are implemented, but which is also able to guarantee that the necessary investments are made.
So you just triggered something. I remember during one of the episodes of this podcast when I interviewed Richard Monan, he told me exactly the same thing about the Copenhagen $100 billion, and he said emphatically, as an individual though, that climate financing is political. You seem to be saying the same thing or similar thing, but I want to know from your own approach, what is the politics behind climate financing?
Well, yeah, I agree completely with Munang. Firstly, the $100 billion for climate finance is not a scientific figure. It is a figure that was politically negotiated at the Copenhagen Conference of Parties. Scientifically, if you look at all of the economics and financial figures, the cost of climate change in Africa is in the trillions of dollars. This is what we would actually require every year in order to address climate change. If you look at what is happening in Southern Africa today, just look at the infrastructure that has been destroyed in one city alone, Beira. They say about 60% of the city is underwater. About 80% of the infrastructure of that city has been destroyed. How much do you think it is going to cost? Much more than $100 billion, just one city. Now think about another example. Look at all of the African cities along the western coast coastline, all the way from Namibia up to Mauritania. Many of those cities are already under serious threat of sea level rise. Many of the cities in the extreme west of Africa are already beginning to get affected by sea level rise. They are considering moving parts of the city of Buchanan, parts of Monrovia in Liberia. Similar problems are happening along the Gambia River, where salt water is invading the whole of that river, making the river unusable. All of these are significant impacts, and to address those impacts is going to cost much more than $100 million. So yes, I agree, this is a political figure. So why don't we go back to a situation where we take on board all of the economic, financial analysis, we understand the cost of climate change, we also understand the cost of adapting to climate change, and the cost of rearranging our production systems in order to be compliant with the global goals of climate change, and look at that as the basis on which we are going to finance climate actions. So we use a scientific figure and not the political figure of $100 billion.
Use the scientific figure and not the political figure. Thank you so much for your time. My last thoughts that I want to know from you, what will be your measurement of success of the African Climate Week happening in Ghana? What indices will you use to measure success?
The first, I think, is we need to come out of this week with an agreement on what exactly we are going to be evaluating in terms of activities, programs, actions, policies towards meeting the 1.5 degrees. What are we going to be evaluating, and how are we as Africans going to be involved in evaluating the actions, not only of ourselves, but of everyone else? That is the first. The second is, to what extent is Africa Climate Week going to be able to inform us on how to reform the global climate governance framework, the global climate governance context, in order to ensure that it allows us to meet the 1.5 degrees target, bearing in mind that much of Africa is already beyond 1.5 degrees. And thirdly, the third and most significant measure is going to be, to what extent does having Africa Climate Week on the African climate, on the African continent, to what extent is that going to raise the consciousness of the African citizens themselves? I don't know how many African students are involved in the No Planet B movement. I think very few of them are involved in there. And why? Precisely because the level of awareness of climate change in Africa is very limited. Limited in the sense that we know that climate is changing. We know that, you know, we are having all these disasters. We know that we are having heat waves and all of that. But there's very little awareness of the climate policy and governance processes on the African continent. The students in Europe and in North America, they are aware of all of the COP processes. They know what is being debated because they get the information. They have the infrastructure to distribute information and to receive it. They have the infrastructure to interpret complicated scientific information for all different audiences. We don't have that in Africa. So for me, another important outcome has to be the extent to which this Africa Week raises awareness and consciousness about climate change. Finally, beyond just raising awareness, I think this Africa Climate Week should also begin to produce real engagement between policymakers, civil society, the private sector, and all other stakeholders. Real, real engagement. Not that we go to this meeting, we go to that meeting, and we meet with them, but on a continuous basis. How do we use this week to mobilize everyone and keep everyone mobilized?
Please remember to check out the website. It is www.climatetalkpodcast.com. The link is in the description below. Feel free to subscribe, share this content with your friend. And of course, the goal is to inspire you, to encourage you to take climate actions, no matter how little. Take those climate actions. It's time to call it a wrap on this episode of the Climate Talk Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I am really, really grateful. My name is Seifumi Adebote. Feel free to connect with me. My Twitter handle is at @ADEBOTES. I'll be happy to take this conversation forward. If you think there is a way we can make this better, please and please do not hesitate to write me adebotesei@gmail.com. Thank you so much for your time listening to this episode of the podcast. Remember to check out the website www.climatetalkpodcast.com. This podcast is also available on SoundCloud, on iTunes, on Google Podcast, virtually everywhere on the net. Just type in Climate Talk Podcast and boom, it pops right to your face. Thank you so much again. I'm very grateful. For every episode of the Climate Talk Podcast you get to listen to, Olumide Idowu and Jimo Oluwatobisegun are those behind the scenes. The Climate Talk Podcast will make a return next month, the last Wednesday of every month, actually. Feel free to always subscribe so you can be the first to get notified when we publish. This is where I have to call it a wrap. Thank you so much for your time again. And keep taking those climate actions. Together, we can make the world a better place.